Obama gives a Father's Day speech telling fathers to be more involved in their children's lives and not guilty. That was the R. Kelly verdict handed down by a Chicago jury Friday afternoon. And those are the topics for this week's Bloggers Roundtable. Joining me are Jay Smooth, who blogs at illdoctrine.com, Danny Perry, who blogs at therealready.blogspot.com, and Eric Brown, who blogs at detroitnews.com. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's start out with R. Kelly. He was acquitted on all charges of child pornography. Reports say he cried when he heard the verdict. What was your reaction, Eric?
Well, he should have cried. I happen to have seen the video, and was that him? I would have to say yes. And for him to get acquitted on all 14 counts, I would have cried like a baby, too. Because he escaped going to jail for possibly 15 years.
Danny, what do you think it says about the prosecutors? Were they the ones who dropped the ball in this very complicated case where people said, oh, that was the girl, it wasn't her, it's been so many years? Did the prosecutors drop the case? Was R. Kelly lucky? What happened?
Well, it's hard to say. I personally didn't see the video, but the question is, how did it take 6.5 years to get to this point? With the prosecution with as much evidence as they supposedly had, how was the defense able to even impart reasonable doubt in this case? Ultimately, it hinged on the identity his and of his alleged victim. The fact that she didn't testify, her family was split on whether or not it was her in the video. The defense was able to create reasonable doubt. So R. Kelly, he had his day in court. He was found not guilty. But having not seen the tape, I won't speculate on whether or not it was him. But again, with this level of evidence, I think. Questions regarding the prosecution are legitimate at this point.
J. R. Kelly has a history of being involved with underage girls. He, according to court records in 1994, married the late singer Aaliyah. He was 27. She was 15. The marriage license was reportedly falsified to show that she was 19 years old. Of course, she later died tragically and was widely mourned. But by that time, their marriage was annulled. Does his history have an influence on not this case, which is over, but on how people perceive him, Jay?
I think, there's a lot of division on that. There are many people whose perception of him is definitely clouded by that, and I don't think they're ever able to look at him the same way. Then there are a lot of people who they enjoy his music and have a connection to him on that level, and somehow they're able to block out all these issues, even though they're impossible to avoid. And it really surprises me because, I mean, certainly there are many artists, let's say Miles Davis was known for being abusive towards the women in his life, but when you listen to a Miles Davis record, you're not really hearing that part of him on the song. Whereas when you listen to R. Kelly, I feel like all of his lyrics are so campy and sort of borderline sleazy. It's almost as if you're being exposed to the same part of his psyche that you are in all of these rumors and cases that you hear about. So the fact that so many people are able to sort of compartmentalize and say that they don't think he should be held accountable for his actions because we like all his hit records so much, it makes me wonder if our relationship with the media has really taken a strange turn these days.
Danny, do you think that people should be responsible for what they listen to, as in, don't buy any records if you think the guy's sleazy?
Well, yeah, the short answer to that is yeah. And this society there's an ongoing sexualization of the whole society. And with cameras and phones and just the internet and the ability to post these types of videos, I think there are going to be more of these cases coming down the pipe. And with young victims of this age, they're impressionable. They're starstruck in many cases. And the fact that the popular music pretty much is all about sex at this point in time, it's difficult enough to raise your, particularly daughters, in the right way when you're competing against popular music. So I think it's up to parents to really watch what they allow their kids to listen to in front of them. And there is in my opinion, I won't buy it if the lyrics are questionable.
I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. We are back with our Bloggers Roundtable. Joining me, Jay Smooth, who blogs at illdoctrine.com, Danny Perry of therealready.blogspot.com, and Eric Brown, who blogs at detroitnews.com. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Yesterday was Father's Day, and Barack Obama took absentee black fathers to task Sunday during an address at Chicago's popular Southside Church. He said the government has to do more to help struggling American families, but he also said that fathers must do more to raise their children. Here's a soundbite from his speech.
If we're honest with ourselves, we'll admit that too many fathers are also missing. Too many fathers are MIA. Too many fathers are AWOL, missing from too many lives and too many homes. They've abandoned their responsibilities. They're acting like boys instead of men.
Jay, was he channeling Bill Cosby? No, what I mean by that is that he is someone who's known for a certain type of oratory, and this was a slightly different kind of oratory. What do you make of it?
I did find it somewhat reminiscent of what we've heard from Bill Cosby, but I'd say the more recent incarnation of Bill Cosby's message in the book that he put out with Alvin Poussaint, because at first, Bill Cosby was coming out very, very strongly against young black men in a way that alienated a lot of people because it didn't seem to place it in the context of all the structural inequalities that black men are also facing that factors into that. But in his more recent messages, Bill Cosby has sort of found more of a balance of acknowledging both the personal responsibility and each individual black man's shortcomings within that, and also sort of the institutional racism and inequalities that factor into that. So I feel like it did somewhat remind me of Bill Cosby's message, but I think Barack Obama is doing a good job of walking that tightrope where you don't want to seem like you're blaming everything on the system, but you don't want to seem as if you're throwing black men under the bus either. I mean, I thought it was a very good speech in that regard.
Eric, what did you think?
I concur with what Jay said, because I did not get to hear the full speech until today. One of the local radio stations here played it, and I was able to listen to it on my way to work. And the key to the speech is, as Jay said, he did not paint all black men with the same brush by throwing them under the bus. And, you know, every time you hear Barack Obama give a speech of significance, go back to his speech on race, you just learn more about him as a person. You appreciate him as a person. And even today, I'm looking forward to driving down to Detroit to see him this evening, because he, without a doubt, should become the next president of this country, not just because of who he is, but how he presents himself. And that speech that he gave yesterday was reminiscent of something that was necessary at the right time. And what better day and time to give a speech like that than Father's Day?
You know, I noted that he talked a little bit about his own father walk, his own path with his father, and he really has used his own story, his own narrative to reshape how he deals with people. Danny, do you find that effective?
Well, I think it's very effective, particularly the speech yesterday. When you look at the statistics, all of them show that single-parent households are just dramatically more likely to be poverty-stricken. The percentage of incarcerated men who grew up in fatherless households, it tells the same story. High school dropouts, long-term unemployed. You get the same answers. It's the same story in almost every case. If the dad is there, the percentages are dramatically different. So you can't really underestimate the importance that a father brings to a household, and you can't underestimate burden on single mothers and extended families is due to the absence of fathers in the household. And someone like Barack Obama, he overcame it and has succeeded beyond all measure. However, there are a lot of young men and families that don't due to that particular reason, the father just not being there.
You know, I want to move on to a different topic, which is how things are playing out on the internet, because there is all this storytelling, which Barack Obama has done about himself, Senator John McCain has done about himself. They each have their own websites, plus, you know, there are all these supporter sites and party sites. Now, you know, we've been talking a little bit about this new site, FightTheSmears.com, which is a Barack Obama site, trying to deal with attacks on himself and his wife. Do you think that it's smart Danny to go ahead and to create your own kind of truth squad or rebuttal, or does it just open you up to charges of being oversensitive in a political environment where many things are fair game?
Well, I think it's smart. All you have to do is look at the Gore and Kerry campaigns to see what can happen if you sit back and let your opponents paint the picture of you for you. So the Fight the Smears, I think it's a good start. And there are some other grassroots sites like the MichelleObamaWatch.com that have also rallied to this cause. And it demonstrates that he, as a candidate, is not content to be painted by his opponent, and that he's actually going to fight to win this nomination and to get keep this campaign focused on issues.
Eric, is there a chance that it could backfire? Because some of the many charges that you hear are the Obamas are too sensitive. When Senator Obama said, "Lay off my wife," on national television, for example.
I don't think it would backfire at all. As a matter of fact, John Kerry is not in the White House right now because he was able to allow himself to be portrayed as a wimp when the 527 started doing all this negative advertising for him. And one thing that the Obama camp is doing, they are providing an opportunity for people to see truth to power. A lot of people don't watch Fox News. A lot of people don't read newspapers and magazines. They are able to go to a website to learn what has been said, and these websites are giving people an opportunity to combat that. Unfortunately, John Kerry did not have the wherewithal or the intuitive skills to do something like this. I think it's going to be very powerful.
Now, what do you think, Jay, of John McCain's ability not just to create his own web properties but to also leverage what's being called viral media? You know, we talk a lot about Senator Barack Obama because he has been good at this, on our Bloggers Roundtable. But there's no law that says that Senator Barack Obama has to remain better on this. There are both campaigns and many outsiders trying to make sure that they have a stake in the kind of digital marketing of the presidency. What do you see that's going on that's particularly noteworthy from Republicans or conservatives?
I mean, certainly I think there's a great deal for the McCain campaign to tap into. I mean, there's a very strong conservative blogger presence out there, you know, and many very influential conservative websites. But of course, it'll be difficult to build alliances with sites without connecting with sites that have certain messages that the McCain campaign might find themselves apologizing for later on. So it'll definitely be a tight walk for them, and I think a tightrope walk, I should say. And I think it'll be a little more difficult for McCain to come across as credible as being a big internet player, because when you hear Barack Obama speak about these things, he refers to YouTube and things like that as if he's actually conversant and uses those things. And I think it'll be a little harder for John McCain to be credible suggesting that he's Twittering and instant messaging or what have you.
All right. Well, if you want to Twitter us anytime, you just go on my Facebook page. John McCain can Twitter me. We want him on. Barack Obama, too. Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining me was Jay Smooth. He blogs at illdoctrine.com and joined us from the NPR studios in New York City. Danny Perry, he blogs at therealready.blogspot.com. He was at KPFT Radio in Houston, Texas. And Eric Brown, who blogs at detroitnews.com.